GoFundMe, which is called Solidarity and Relief Fund for UO Student Workers, where we are asking for donations. For updates on our campaign, we post regularly on our Instagram, which is at UO Student Workers, and our Twitter there.
Just at UO Student Workers, except without the O in workers.
At UO Student Workers without the O in workers.
Is the
And
Twitter, yes.
the Solidarity and Relief Fund, how do people find that?
The Solidarity and Relief Fund is on GoFundMe, and it's called Solidarity and Relief Fund for UO Student
Should
Workers.
we share the link with them too?
All right. Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM KBOO. We've been talking with Will Garahan, Ella Molloy, and Elizabeth White of the University of Oregon Student Workers Union. I'm Jamie Partridge. Here is my co-host, Laura Wadlin. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
I'm Rose Maddox, and I'd like to tell you that you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, the station that I listen to when I'm in the area.
You're listening to KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 2 special programming campaign. Check out all the great special programs we're bringing to you in February and March at kboo.fm/thrills. Help us reach our goal of $17,000 by March 25th. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text us. Type in KBOO to the number 44321. For the thrill of it all, keep listening.
If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. And today we're here with folks with Vanport Mosaic and other projects. How are y'all doing today?
Good. Thanks for having us.
Doing well.
Doing great. Thank you again for having us.
Right on. Well, appreciate y'all for being on and talking about this important work that you're all doing and important topics and events, community events that have been happening for Black History Month. But first, can we, y'all mind just going around, maybe just introduce yourselves? And it sounds like, again, people are with multiple projects and other kind of campaigns or whatnot.
Sure, I'll go ahead. I am Damaris Webb, and I, along with Laura Laforte, co-founded the Vanport Mosaic and help it along as an amplification platform for other initiatives as well as things that we're curious about. And my discipline is actually in the making of theater. And I'm really glad that I'm here today.
My name is Bruce Poinsett. I'm a writer based throughout the Portland metro area. And also I have the pleasure of collaborating with a number of organizations doing great work, again, throughout the Portland metro, including Vanport Mosaic. So prior to getting COVID, I was going to be hosting a discussion called No Cops in Schools, No Police Money in Politics, which will happen after this recording airs. But it's still going to be happening, featuring Danny Cage, a local student activist, and Joy Elise Davis, who's the executive director of Imagine Black. So I hope people can, well, again, this will be happening after that airs, but I hope people enjoy that conversation and learn more about the work that's happening.
And I'm Michael Stevenson, but in print master artist, Michael Bernard Stevenson Jr. Artist by trade. I have a personal practice. However, that personal practice is community oriented and or involves community projects, many of which being youth, many of which being Kent Ford and the legacy of the Black Panthers and overlap there. And we'll do a little time traveling during this conversation, which is to say I also work with a lot of groups and organizations, including Vanport Mosaic, and including collaborating with Vanport Mosaic to particularly get educational materials in schools and in the area, particularly surrounding Kent Ford. However, in this event for with Kent Ford, we'll be working particularly with a project that's centering Jefferson High School and the contemporary modernization project that's occurring. So even though this airing will be in the future of the past of the event that's occurred, the event is launching the initiative to get an archive at Jefferson. So when you're listening to this, this will still be relevant. And I'm sure we'll get more into it. So I guess I'll just say that now.
Sure. Well, I mean, why don't we go ahead and jump in, at least initially, to talk about the series of events that happened in late February and featured Kent Ford, as you mentioned, in one of those. And then a lot of other different things happening, including films and whatnot, a celebration of Black History Month, of the Panthers 10-point platform. And a lot of that's also under this particular banner of memory activism, which is very important, very interesting concept as well. So can we kind of ease into talking about the event, from how the event sort of came to be, and a little bit of where these great ideas come from?
One of the great opportunities that I have with my position is to follow curiosity and something that really starts to juice me. And my love of community support and hearing stories, I think, is one of the big things that brought Laura and I together in the first place, with different disciplines of storytelling. And so this February event is an example of that. And having met Mr. Ford and consider him a mentor and a friend over these past several years, starting with his walking tour of Albina, which he's been holding for quite some time, and that now Vanport Mosaic holds a few times a year for the public so that he can just do his thing and not worry about getting the word out, etc. And so this weekend's events are my opportunity to support Mr. Ford and the people that he really enjoys having conversations with, and also the people that I've met through working with Mr. Ford, which include Michael and in a roundabout way, Bruce. So this Friday, tomorrow night, will be a conversation, No Cops in Schools, No Police Money in Politics, that's spearheaded by Bruce. And he can talk a little bit in more detail about that. And that the whole weekend, I guess I should have backtracked by saying the whole weekend, Mr. Ford was considering that we would look at points 7, 8, and 9 of the 10-point platform, and looking at the legacy of the organizations here in Portland who are still continuing the work of points 7, 8, and 9 of the 10-point platform, which is looking at incarceration, policing, and the judicial system. So No Cops in Schools, No Police Money in Politics, bam, that's, you know, right there. And then Saturday afternoon, there'll be a performance of a new play that I commissioned to be written about Mr. Ford's life, called Walking Through Portland with a Panther, The Life of Mr. Kent Ford, All Power. And then Saturday night, the project that Michael is introducing about the initiative for an archive at Jefferson High School, which is my alma mater, so very near and dear to me. And then on Sunday, Mr. Ford, of course, will be at all of these events and have something, you know, to engage the audience with, well as having different tablers of organizations who might not be presenting but are doing the work right now, including yours, Adam, Keys, Beats, and Bars, and I can go through that list later. All the amazing groups who are going to be in one house. So that's very exciting to me. And then on Sunday afternoon, Mr. Ford is giving a presentation, and there will also be a short documentary video, Sting Like a Bee, about him. And then a panel of some rock star historians, activists, and artists in the Portland area. And then Sunday night, have a screening of performance piece that's been developed for film about Black life and the participation in America's economic. Just talking about it, I get like so excited about all the side conversations that happen around the actual information that's happening. And for people in Portland to know that, you know, there are groups and individuals who are engaging this material and moving stuff forward. And there's a lot of different ways that people can get involved depending on their level of comfort.
Yeah, and it sounds like there's a lot of different ways that people are plugging in with their particular interests and their skills. And Bruce, it sounds like you were going to maybe debrief us on kind of how these conversations are being very successful in the community, the way they're getting people to engage on these topics.
I was kind of relate that back to, no cops in schools, no police money in politics event, which is kind of really the idea is to highlight number of political fights that are happening right now when it comes to simply overreach and the power grabs happening right now by whether it be police unions, larger sort of aspects of the criminal justice system. But when you talk about no cops in schools, that's a reference to SROs or student resource officers, specifically in Portland public schools. And it's been interesting. Post 2020, there was a lot of public pressure, a lot of institutions that said, you know, we're listening to Black voices, you know, we want to follow, and a lot of that was blowing smoke, but you had a few wins in there. For example, Portland Public Schools terminating their contract to have armed police officers in the schools, although in very recent months, we've seen a very big pushback to try and get cops back in Portland Public Schools specifically. It's also been, you know, it's kind of coincided with really a pushback over, honestly, since anything took place or since anything kind of took hold in 2020 to increase police budgets, when people have finally been, a lot of activists have been loudly and very directly challenging the idea that the only way for public safety is to give more power to the police. So you saw the rise of chance of, like, you know, defund the police, and then you saw pushback in a number of forms, such as I look at these last midterms where I watched God knows how many ads talking about, you know, defund the police radicals are making the city less safe. And, you know, we've defunded the police, which didn't really happen. The Portland police budget is currently at record levels. Yet, again, you see all this messaging saying it's the activist's fault. We've defunded the police, everything's going crazy. And a lot of that is really, I think, to the uncommon eye, you know, most people aren't paying attention to the statistics, the data. Most people aren't, you know, following the political minutiae, but it really comes down to the police lobby, which gets to put these messages out, launder these messages through politicians, and dominate the conversation essentially with this campaign of fear, where most of the people are saying, well, I don't really feel safe. And they seem to be saying, it sounds reasonable that we should give more money to the police for trainings and, you know, put more police officers out there. But that's all they're hearing. So with this conversation, just kind of bring it back, it's really looking at the connection of, okay, what are the alternatives that other people can add? And there's a lot of people doing great work, which is why I was so happy to have Danny and Joy Elise out there to kind of talk about, one, students especially pushing to make sure cops don't come back into schools, and PPS, and also hopefully to push other districts to do the same instead of, again, going backwards. But then also Imagine Black recently rolled out a tool, the No Police Money Pledge, which is actually holding politicians accountable to, you know, just not be making decisions influenced by the police lobby. That is essentially just to, you know, again, give the public a chance to engage with people doing this work on a couple of fronts.
And, you know, it's interesting, I guess we're not isolated as we have been, but I remember I was at like a Vietnamese restaurant where I saw the news just talking about how SROs were coming back. That conversation was starting, and heard about it in a meeting. So anyway, so it's interesting that I thought it was resolved, then that was happening. But either way, I'm excited that there's conversation about it. I was thinking about a few things. You know, Adam, you brought up memory activism. I'll circle back to it, but my project's really linked into that premise. And then I was also reflecting that I don't know that I ever knew that the plan was 0.67 and 8, though is also interesting because this maybe all started or is related to last year. This is the same event namesake. I was focusing in on point number 5, which I'll read. We want an education for our people that exposes the true nature of this decadent American society. We want an education that teaches us our true history and our role in present day society. We believe in an educational system that will give to our people a knowledge of self. If a man does not have knowledge of himself and his position in society and the world, then he has little chance to relate to anything else. So I was thinking about how, at least for me, and at least how it's written, this is a foundational point for me and for these other points about like exemption from military service, police brutality, and all of these other, and state, you know, violence, federal stuff, is we're actually needing to be educated in order to like fight against them. And so in revisiting that in this year of programming, the project that's going on, so it's like no cops in schools, and what we do want is a Jefferson archive. And so part of the conversation as well is, and we'll be at this event, but again, it's actually, you can listen to this in the temporal moment that you're hearing it, because this effort is beginning at the event and is continuing through 2008 into forever. 2028 into forever. We're time traveling, baby. It's going back to 1920. I was just looking at a board that was found, you know, with old newspapers and handwritten records of everyone writing their address in cursive, legibly. And so, you know, there's a lot of fascinating things with this initiative. We're like actually digging through and seeing stuff. But a part of it, as it relates to point number 5, is that this history is actively being lost. Like, students have no idea. I'm researching it so that I can teach it. But it also is like people are pulling stuff out of cupboards. They're like, yeah, this almost went into the trash. So we've already aggregated a bunch of stuff. And at the event, we will essentially be sharing it. And we will be telling the story that, I guess it's not a spoiler because it'll already have been told. But essentially, we've been doing community engagement around this project for several months. We've been working with students at this point for several weeks directly. I know it'll be too late for you, but I'm paying students who to come to the event because I also have programming through Fanport Mosaic to do a project called The Young Archivists, where students are also leading and doing this work in league with me and elders. And so, yeah, that's the event itself is the saying that this is happening. It will show the work I've done so far with students in the classroom. We will have items then there to check out, but also folks have been invited to bring items of their personal collection and share out about them. So that's what we got planned. But I'm kind of, it's interesting as always to be working in the context of the Vanport Mosaic and to have this conversation that Bruce is bringing up and the conversation I'm bringing up. They're not unrelated conversations to me. It's like the state, and we're having to fight with the planners and all this stuff to get brick and mortar for this archive. Meanwhile, it's a different conversation, but as far as like what comes into the school, cops are just getting let right in the door. And so that, again, 10-point program, I mean, I was teaching this at Fred Hampton Summer Camp with Kent in audience to the students, and I was just like, man, we are not doing so hot on these. But that being said, when I got to point number 5, I'm like, it's happening. So it's happening, and we just got to keep doing what we can to do what we can.
Hey, Prison Pipeline host here, Adam Carpinelli, asking you to donate to KBO Community Radio 90.7 FM. We need your support for the station to keep shows like Prison Pipeline on the air, talking about the beat and pulse of what's going on inside and outside of the prisons and the criminal injustice system. Donate now at kboo.fm. Click on donate. You can also mail us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And we have a great mobile app that you can check out as well. Support the movement for prison abolition, fighting mass incarceration, and keeping our communities safe and healthy without police and prisons. Join the movement now. Go to kboo.fm, click on donate, support the movement for community radio. Please donate now. For folks tuning in, you've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland, and we're here with folks from Vanport Mosaic talking about memory activism and the Black Panther Party's 10-point platform, its relevance today, and the legacy continues, and a lot of the same matters continue on, as well as having all this police in schools, and, you know, and we have our kind of hyper-military industrial complex, which kind of also fuels part of those imperial desires as well. Can you talk more about kind of what's going on at the schools, like on the ground today, what that looks like in, you know, your average school now, and how many armed officers and things are present in some of the institutions?
It varies from districts, but so PPS, for example, as has still not brought SROs back, but I use my alma mater, for example. So I grew up in Lake Oswego, Oregon. And Lake Oswego Schools definitely is, right now they have two SROs who kind of patrol around throughout the district. And one of the things I think that, just to quickly go back to a point Michael made, because it really resonated with me, is just that the idea of being able to preserve this history, or not just preserve, but engage with this history. Like I look at Mr. Ford. I first met him when I was a reporter with the Scanner 10, 11 years ago. And I can't oversell enough how important and how much of an opportunity it is for people in Portland, as well as just throughout this metro area, throughout the state, to engage with him and be able to have that connection to the Panther history. Because when we're talking about solutions, we're talking about alternatives to, you know, policing. When we talk about alternatives and things actually, you know, what actually makes people feel safe, is like, he's one of those people who actually has, you know, answers and practice that we can lean on. And the school system I went through, it's not that much different today in terms of how most teachers, most staff are going to, you know, frame the Panthers in terms of, you know, this outdated idea that they're like some terrorist organization versus a community group that served the people and did plug so many different holes just to, you know, again, for safety, for survival. So when it comes to the police issue, there was a recent report, so I've been bouncing around a little bit, by the ACLU calling cops and no counselors how the lack of school mental health staff is harming students. And even for like a district, we talk about again, like you say LO school district has two SROs and they're responsible for, you know, all the schools, you know, you look and you say like, okay, well, how much bad can they really do with that broad of a range? But similar to the reports nationally, what you get is instances of SROs physically assaulting students of color, especially female students of color. You get sexual harassment incidents, bullying, harassment, intimidation, cooperation sometimes between SROs and staff in terms of inappropriately accessing student information. And I'll be careful about how I talk about this, because I'm liberty to share so much of the story, but, you know, there's an incident that just also one of the groups I've worked with over the years in my whole town is Respond to Racism Lake Oswego, where, you know, there are not a lot of resources people feel comfortable reaching out to about incidents, whether it be in schools, whether it be, you know, other racist incidents in the city. But one of the things we do hear about is SROs. Got a report about a student who was very briefly in the district, and well, he said that the SRO would legally access their records to look for like some, basically use some past incident as impetus to arrest the student in school in front of all their peers. And yeah, you get these incidents, but also what you get, you know, when we talk about the intimidation, we talk about the fact that people don't feel like they can really report it to the school because the school is going to be on the SRO's side. They don't, or they just don't want to go through a knockdown, drag them out battle legally where they don't have any support. So most of the stuff just gets, it kind of stops there. I say, I would say it's just like a lot. There's a huge culture of intimidation, a huge culture of power abuses, and people feel like they have very little recourse to fight against it.
It's unnecessary, but it's funny to me. It's not dissimilar from both the magic and chaos of the Vanport world, or the mosaics, all the ways in which the different pieces are coming together. Was not, again, and maybe just because I didn't read it, LOL, sure that it was points 6, 7, and 8. But I thought it was interesting how Bruce brought up that, like, Pant particularly, but the Panthers generally, but it's fascinating being able to learn as a young Black person in the U.S., literally being able to rub elbows with a literal legend, but that then, in some of the ways, the lessons are, like, history or basic, but helpful of who and how they're coming to me. And so to share some of that history with all of you listening now is just, there's so much emphasis not only on the breakfast program and not like, yeah, the breakfast program's cool, like we know nationally, but like hearing the stories and getting text messages from Kent from people who are older and are like, oh, I remember getting breakfast from you, and like level of impact of what it meant for an activist group. But it's funny to that we, in the lens that I'm trying to think of it as, essentially a group that was persecuted by the American government, you know, that they were just community organizing, feeding kids, being in their lives, supporting healthy community. And it's interesting too, talking to graduates who graduated in 71 and all that stuff, about the richness of education there, about getting through the feeder schools from elementary to middle to high and playing first chair trumpet and winning sports championships and going to college and doing all kinds of this crazy stuff. And now that we're like, we need the police in there, and school's not that tight, and students are on their phone and they're having trouble paying attention. And it's not like every student is bad. Part of it is how we hold the culture, and the fact that the component of culture is missing, literally, like within the school as an archived content that they have access to and understand how to have access to, but in the larger community, of which cops are in both and are not solving that problem. So, and I mean, boy, I have a podcast called Tin Can Phone and talk all about prison stuff with guys who are inside, on the outside. And so it really goes into depth, and it's also on KBOO, really goes into depth at the level at which the system is failing and is designed to fail and is designed to serve a certain group. But really, it's appalling to me that a person with a weapon would be welcomed into a school for any reason.
Well, as we have just a few minutes to wrap up, can we talk about a little bit of follow-up on these different projects and how people can get in touch, check them out, plug in the community?
The Vanport Mosaic website, which is vanportmosaic.org, and we are on all the social media platforms as well. There is the opportunity to sign up for our newsletter, which goes out maybe once a month. And we try to capture and give opportunity for engagement with all this amazing work that's being done throughout the city. As both Bruce and Michael have pointed to in this conversation, all these initiatives and this work is continuing on. And Mr. Kent Ford, who is still with us and will be 80 years old this year, celebrating his 80th birthday, is still offering his walking tour of Albina. So if you want to jump on one of those upcoming tours, make sure you get on our newsletter so you can find out when they are in the warmer months.
Yeah, so in terms of, again, with, for example, the push to, you know, make sure SROs don't come back into the Portland Public Schools specifically, I would, again, kind of direct people to one of our panelists, Danny Cage, and to follow as far as like student activists who are pushing this work. It's on top of all of it. A lot of the community organizations right now are trying to mobilize, whether it's through, you know, op-eds to educate the community and whatnot. So I encourage people, you know, use your voice to make sure that tide doesn't go the other way. Other panelists, Joy Lee Davis, part of, again, Imagine Black, they have No Police Money Pledge, which is specifically, again, for elected officials, people, candidates running for office, a just tell people to, one, encourage, if you have someone, you know, in your community who's thinking about running, encourage them to sign the pledge. Then also use that pledge as a tool, whether it's school board elections, city council, obviously state, local government at all levels, to see where your preferred candidates stand on this issue. And if they haven't signed the pledge, ask them why. Now, you want to know who's, how else to put it, who else is in your politician's pockets. It's important information. So follow up as the No Police Money Pledge. You can go to imagineblack.org, I believe, to learn more about that.
And for me, I mean, I really have the SEO down on master artist Michael Bernard Stevenson Jr. So Google and that will get you somewhere. As far as the school project, I think it's happening for the next several years. So if somehow you're in the Jefferson neighborhood, it shouldn't be too hard to find. That being said, it's in the lives of the people whose lives it needs to be in. And if you think you want to support this work, there's probably a school in your neighborhood or a kid in your life who could kick it with you, and it would be good for them. So I certainly encourage you to do that.
Great. Well, thanks so much, everybody. Looking forward to having you on again next time. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Special thanks to our guests and Prison Pipeline Collective member Karen James for post-production. Free them all. Prison Pipeline host here, Adam Carpinelli, asking you to donate to KBO Community Radio 90.7 FM. We need your support for the station to keep shows like Prison Pipeline on the air. Join the movement now. Go to kboo.fm, click on donate, support the movement for community radio. Please donate now.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2H2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings.